A single tap on the space bar, just one extra space typed after a comma. That is silently costing app developers millions of dollars in lost revenue right now.
Absolutely. Every single day.
Yeah, brilliant software is just getting buried at the bottom of search results. And not because the code is bad, you know, but because the developer didn't understand this invisible, really unforgiving machinery that runs our digital storefronts.
Right. The algorithm just doesn't care how good your app is if you break the rules.
Exactly. I mean, you are carrying around this silent salesperson in your pocket, one that works 24/7, making literally billions of micro decisions about what you see, what you end up downloading, and, well, where you spend your money.
And that invisible machinery is App Store Optimization, or ASO. The rules of engagement there have fundamentally shifted.
Which is exactly why we're doing this comprehensive deep dive for you today.
Yeah, we are synthesizing the official 2026 vendor documentation from both Apple and Google. But we aren't just stopping at those theoretical manuals.
Because the manuals don't always tell the whole truth, right?
Exactly. So we are cross-referencing those official rules with cutting-edge, real-world data from practitioner agencies, places like Fitcher, AppTweak, and AppFollow. We really want to look at what the algorithms are actually doing out there in the wild.
Okay, let's unpack this, because before you can even evaluate an app's screenshots or read its reviews, the app has to actually manifest on your screen. It has to be found.
That's the first hurdle, always.
Right, and that brings us to the stark structural differences between how Apple and Google index text. Reading through these sources, the iOS App Store functions sort of like packing a carry-on suitcase for a ridiculously strict budget airline.
Oh, that is the perfect way to describe it.
I mean, every single inch, every ounce, every character is measured and restricted.
Because Apple's indexing system is built on these incredibly rigid constraints. For keyword search on iOS, the algorithm only looks at three specific fields.
Just three.
Just three. You are granted a 30-character title, a 30-character subtitle, and a hidden keyword field that allows exactly 100 characters. Yeah, that 160-character footprint is your entire universe for organic discovery.
Which brings us back to that million-dollar spacebar mistake I mentioned earlier, because the mechanics of how you pack that 100-character hidden field are honestly mind-boggling.
So easy to mess up.
You are required to separate your keywords with commas. But if you put a space after the comma, you completely sabotage the entire string.
You really do.
Like, if you are a productivity app and your keywords are focus and timer, typing focus, space, timer, forces the system's string parser to read space timer as a single token.
Right, which makes no sense to the search engine.
Exactly. Not only did you waste a precious character on the physical space, but you've basically told the algorithm to index you for a nonsensical phrase. It absolutely has to be focus timer mashed together.
What's fascinating here is the absolute unforgiving nature of Apple's Boolean indexing. It basically operates as a binary system.
A one or a zero.
Right. A keyword is either in your index array or it is not. The App Store algorithm assigns zero algorithmic weight to repetition.
Oh, so saying it twice doesn't help.
Not at all. If you place the word timer in your title, and then you try to reinforce it by putting it in your subtitle or your hidden keyword field, you haven't signaled higher relevance. All you've done is permanently burn the character count in that second field.
The strategy just requires the surgical precision. If a word lives in the title, you cross it off your master list and you never use it again.
Never.
But developers constantly fall into a massive trap here. I mean, they spend weeks weaving these thoroughly researched keywords into a beautiful 4,000-character app description.
Oh, I've seen it so many times.
They craft this compelling prose thinking it's going to boost their search ranking.
And it does absolutely nothing for search.
Yeah.
Apple's system entirely ignores the full description for keyword search.
Wait, really?
Entirely. Completely. The web crawler logic we've all been trained on for two decades, you know, from standard SEO, it just does not apply to the iOS indexer. The description exists purely for human conversion. It's just to persuade the user once they're already on the page. The search algorithm is completely blind to it.
So then we flip over to Google Play, and it is a completely different architectural philosophy. If iOS is a strict carry-on, Google Play is a massive cargo hold.
Yeah, they give you so much more room to breathe.
Google hands you a 30-character title, an 80-character short description, and then a 4,000-character long description. And the critical distinction here is that Google fully indexes every single word of that 4,000-character block.
Because Google is, at its core, a search engine company built on natural language processing. Their algorithm doesn't just read isolated strings of text.
Right, it's smarter than that.
Exactly, it maps semantic relationships. It actually tries to understand the contextual meaning of the prose. Because of this NLP architecture, their metadata policy strictly mandates natural, human-readable sentences.
So you can't just dump your iOS hidden keyword array into the Google description.
No, if you attempt keyword stuffing, like if you drop a list of terms separated by commas or use all caps to try and manipulate the crawler, Google's NLP flags the anomaly immediately.
Oh, so it backfired.
Totally. The system physically cannot extract semantic context from a wall of disconnected words. It breaks the categorization mechanism, and Google actually penalizes your visibility for violating their metadata policy.
That makes sense. The optimization strategy requires like weaving high-value terms organically into feature bullets and descriptive paragraphs.
Right. You have to write for a human, but structure for the machine.
Okay, so once you navigate these drastically different text constraints, your app finally appears in the search results. The user sees it. But the battle instantly shifts from parsing text strings to hijacking human visual psychology.
And you have barely any time to do it.
Yeah. The sources detailed this brutal metric known as the 3-second visual test. I mean, you are scrolling through your phone at light speed. Your app has roughly 3 seconds to communicate its core value proposition before the user's thumb flicks you off the screen.
Which means the visual assets, the screenshots, and the app preview videos carry the absolute entirety of the conversion burden in that 3-second window.
Okay, but I need to push back on something massive in the data here, though.
Sure.
We just established that Apple officially states they only index 3 specific text fields, right? The title, subtitle, and the hidden keywords.
Right, that's what the docs say.
Yet the practitioner data from agencies like AppTweak and Fitchertier, they are obsessing over putting text captions physically inside the screenshot images to boost search rankings. How can both things be true?
This exposes the most significant gap between official vendor documentation and algorithmic reality out in the field.
Oh, this is the juicy part.
Since June 2025, forensic ASO data provides overwhelming evidence that Apple is actively running OCR optical character recognition directly on the screenshot image files.
So wait, they are scanning the JPEG itself, extracting the text burned into the image, and feeding that text back into the search index.
Yes. The practitioner agencies prove this by uploading screenshots containing completely fabricated nonsense words.
Oh, that's brilliant.
It really is.
Yeah.
And within weeks, those apps began ranking organically for those exact nonsense search terms. Apple officially denies utilizing OCR for search ranking, but the empirical data confirms the machine's eye is absolutely reading your visual captions.
Which fundamentally changes the entire design architecture of a screenshot. You aren't just designing for a human looking at a high-resolution display anymore. You are designing for a crawler.
Exactly.
But this introduces a massive design friction point the sources call the squint test. The AppFollow analysis of over 1,200 top-grossing apps revealed that the first 3 screenshot frames carry 70% of the conversion weight.
70%? That's huge.
Right. But users aren't viewing these at full resolution. They're looking at tiny thumbnails embedded in a super crowded search results page.
Which is why the squint test is so vital. It requires zooming out of your design canvas until the screenshot is roughly the size of a postage stamp.
And then seeing if it still works.
Yeah. At that microscopic scale, does the visual hierarchy still pull the eye? Is the OCR optimized caption actually legible to a human moving at scrolling speed?
Because if the text is too dense, you might satisfy the algorithmic crawler, but you will completely fail the human conversion test.
Right. It's a really delicate balancing act.
And the constraints around these visuals are also incredibly rigid. Apple's review team utilizes strict device framing guidelines. You can't just render a beautiful, high-converting iPhone screenshot, stretch the aspect ratio, and publish it to your iPad listing.
No, they will catch that immediately.
If the framing does not perfectly mirror native iPad hardware, the human review team will flat out reject the binary.
And that friction extends into the app preview videos, too. Video is a massive conversion lever, obviously, but the platforms enforce drastically different consumption environments.
How so?
Well, on Google Play, the preview video is mandated to autoplay on mute for the first 30 seconds as the user scrolls past.
Oh, wow. Yeah, which destroys the traditional advertising playbook. You can't start with a slow cinematic fade-in or, you know, a sweeping logo reveal.
Exactly. You have 10 seconds to demonstrate the core utility of the software before the user is gone.
That's intense.
And Google's 2025 engagement data highlights a fascinating behavioral quirk here, too. Portrait-oriented videos yield a 7% higher watch time and a 5% better conversion rate than landscape videos across almost all app categories.
Oh, because of the physical friction of rotating the device. We are so conditioned to holding our phones vertically that asking the user to turn their wrist 90 degrees just to evaluate a piece of software, that's an insurmountable barrier.
People just won't do it.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. You can study the 3-second test, you can optimize your captions for OCR, and you can render everything in portrait mode. But relying on best practices is essentially just guessing.
Right, you have to actually test it.
You have to validate the creative through A/B testing. However, the methodology outlined in these sources reveals that running a mathematically flawed test is drastically worse than running no test at all.
Because a flawed test gives you mathematical confidence in a terrible decision.
Exactly. When I was looking at the Google Play Store listing experiments data, the biggest trap developers fall into is the illusion of daily variance.
Oh, peeking at the results too early.
Yes, peeking. It's like taking a cake out of the oven too early, you know? It just collapses. Say you test a new icon. On Tuesday, variant B sees a massive 15% spike in installs. The developer looks at the dashboard, declares variant B the winner, and permanently changes the app icon.
Which is a huge mistake.
Right. They stop the test early based on a random fluctuation in foot traffic. It's like checking the weather on a sunny Tuesday and declaring winter is officially over.
That phenomenon is exactly why Google Play's testing environment employs a complex statistical model called jackknife resampling, paired with sequential probability testing.
Okay, that sounds intense.
It is, but the algorithm is designed to mathematically isolate and ignore that random sunny Tuesday.
So how does the jackknife mechanism actually protect the developer from themselves?
So jackknife resampling systematically drops distinct slices of data, like a highly volatile Wednesday, and recalculates the baseline performance without that outlier.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it simulates how the test would have performed under completely different traffic conditions. The sequential probability model then forces the experiment to continue running until the data reaches a strict 90% confidence threshold.
So you can't just stop it whenever you feel like it.
Exactly. If a developer prematurely terminates the experiment based on a momentary spike, they entirely bypass the jackknife mechanism. They are effectively locking in a false positive driven by statistical noise.
You have to let the math run its course. But the sources highlight another brutal reality check regarding A/B testing. A winning variant is not determined by the install button.
No, it's not.
The ultimate filter is one-day retention. If your shiny, highly optimized new screenshots trick a user into downloading the app, but the actual software doesn't match the promise, they just delete it the next morning.
Right. You successfully optimize your conversion rate to acquire terrible, low-quality users.
You optimize for the tap, not for the ecosystem.
Exactly. Now, on the Apple side of the ecosystem, they introduced custom product pages, or CPPs. A developer can build up to 70 distinct alternative versions of their primary app store listing.
But I have to look at the logistics of this. Building 70 unique pages, I mean, different screenshots, different promotional text, different preview videos, that sounds like an absolute logistical nightmare for a small development team. Is the return on investment actually there to justify that workload?
The ROI equation fundamentally changed with a massive architectural update in July 2025.
Oh, what happened then?
Well, historically, custom product pages were just isolated landing zones for paid user acquisition. You know, you would run a targeted social media ad and deep link that specific ad traffic to a matching custom page. But the July 2025 update integrated CPPs directly into the organic search index.
Oh, wow. Meaning, if I search for meditation for sleep, I don't just land on your generic mindfulness app page. The algorithm dynamically surfaces the specific custom product page you build that highlights the sleep tracking features.
Yes. And Apple's internal benchmarking data demonstrates that aligning the user's specific keyword intent with a hyper-targeted custom product page yields an average 2.5 percentage point increase in conversion.
That sounds small, but
in the context of baseline App Store conversion rates, that represents a staggering 156% relative improvement.
Okay, so the logistical nightmare absolutely pays off exponentially.
It does, provided the developer adheres to the core tenet of scientific testing, which is isolating variables.
Right, you can't change everything at once.
Exactly. If you deploy a custom page with a new icon, completely new screenshot framing, and different promotional text, and you see a conversion lift, you have generated zero actionable intelligence.
Because you have no mathematical proof of which specific element drove the behavior.
Precisely. You have to test one isolated variable against the control, wait for that 90% confidence threshold, and track the one-day retention.
It requires incredible discipline, but let's look in the ultimate bottleneck in this entire machinery. You have meticulously structured your 100-character keyword array. You've passed the squint test. Your custom product pages are converting beautifully.
Everything is perfect.
But every single piece of that infrastructure will instantly collapse if the app possesses a terrible star rating.
Oh, yes. If we connect this to the bigger picture, an app's aggregate rating is not merely a public-facing reputation metric. It is a highly aggressive active lever within the indexing algorithm itself.
The app tweak data actually highlights a specific threshold, the 3.5 star cliff.
Yeah, that's the danger zone.
If an app's average rating dips below 3.5 stars, the algorithm physically suppresses its visibility in iOS search.
The search engine applies a negative weight to the app's relevance score, because Apple's primary directive is protecting user trust in the ecosystem. If the aggregate user base is signaling that the software is defective, the algorithm actively intervenes to prevent new users from discovering it. And that happens regardless of how perfectly optimized the metadata is.
So managing the rating is literally a life or death operational mandate. But soliciting a review from a user involves navigating this super delicate psychological minefield.
It's all about timing.
Think about the mechanics of asking a favor in the real world. You don't demand a favor the absolute second a guest walks through your front door before they've even taken off their coat.
Right.
And you certainly don't ask for a favor right after you've accidentally stepped on their foot. You ask when the environment is warm, when you've just accomplished something positive together.
And the operating systems enforce that psychological timing through hard-coded constraints. On iOS, the system architecture dictates a strict limitation. A developer is permitted to trigger the native rating prompt exactly 3 times per 365 days or unique device.
3 total bullets for the entire year.
That's it.
And if a developer ignores that documentation and tries to fire the prompt a 4th time?
The iOS system initiates a silent failure.
Wait, really? A silent failure?
Yeah. The user sees absolutely nothing on their screen, and the developer's analytics dashboard receives no error code or bounce notification. The system just quietly absorbs the request and deletes it.
Wow. So the timing of those 3 specific prompts is everything. The practitioner sources actually map out clear behavioral triggers for this. You fire the prompt immediately following a positive affect milestone.
Yes, exactly.
Like if the software is a travel utility, you trigger the rating API 3 seconds after the user successfully confirms a complicated flight itinerary. The user is experiencing a dopamine hit of accomplishment.
Right, they're happy.
Conversely, you never trigger the prompt at application launch. Before the software has delivered any value, you never place it immediately preceding a paywall, which frames the relationship as purely transactional.
And crucially, you implement logic to suppress the prompt entirely if the app has recently registered a crash log.
Because the fallout from a poorly timed prompt inevitably generates negative reviews. And how a development team operationalizes their response to a 1-star review directly impacts future acquisition metrics.
This is a huge point. The Apple vendor documentation specifically cautions against utilizing automated copy-paste templates.
Ugh, we've all seen those. A user writes a detailed paragraph about a specific bug, and the developer response is a robotic, "Thank you for the feedback. We are always working to improve the experience."
Right, and potential users scrolling through the review section perform their own kind of natural language processing. A wall of generic templates signals a fundamentally broken support culture.
Yeah, it just looks bad.
It does. However, the data reveals a potent countermechanism. When developers issue highly specific, issue-focused responses explicitly stating, like, "We identify the memory leak you experienced in version 2.4 and the patch is currently live in version 2.5, the original reviewers frequently return to the storefront and manually upgrade their rating.
Really? Just from a good reply?
Yes. Proving human accountability can actively convert a 1-star penalty into a 4-star asset.
That's amazing. But orchestrating all of this, I mean, monitoring the keyword string arrays, analyzing OCR legibility, isolating A/B testing variables, and executing targeted review responses, it's impossible to do natively.
Oh, completely impossible.
The ecosystem requires specialized infrastructure. But reading through the stack, it is clear that the available analytics tools are not interchangeable Swiss Army knives. They are highly specialized instruments designed for very specific workflows.
Yeah. If the operational goal is keyword architecture and metadata strategy, the industry standard cited in the sources is AppTweak.
Right.
Their infrastructure taps directly into Apple's Search Popularity API, allowing them to pull highly accurate, raw volume data to identify specific keyword gaps in a competitor strategy.
But if your team is drowning in a massive volume of user feedback and you need to operationalize that one-star conversion strategy we just discussed, you need a completely different architecture.
Exactly. For review management at scale, the sources point to AppFollow. It basically functions as a specialized CRM, allowing support teams to automate tagging, track response times, and identify sentiment trends across multiple platforms simultaneously.
And finally, if the requirement is macro-level competitive intelligence, like understanding the estimated global ad spend or download velocity of a rival enterprise, the architecture shifts to a platform like Sensor Tower.
Right. The precision tool for the precise algorithmic mechanism.
Well, we have covered a massive amount of technical ground today. We decoded the hidden array logic of the 100-character iOS metadata constraint versus Google's 4,000-character natural language processing engine.
We covered a lot, yeah.
We explored the forensic proof of Apple utilizing OCR to index text directly from screenshot JPEGs, forcing developers to design for the squint test. We broke down the vital importance of jackknife resampling and A-B testing to prevent daily traffic variance from tricking you into false confidence.
Essential stuff.
And we mapped the psychological constraints of dodging the 3.5-star algorithmic penalty box with only 3 review prompts a year.
The level of rigorous engineering and behavioral psychology layered into this ecosystem is staggering. And the underlying logic is evolving rapidly.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? It means the digital storefront is alive.
It's constantly shifting.
Every piece of software you scroll past on your device is actively running thousands of invisible mathematical experiments. They are testing the limits of the crawler, and they are testing the limits of your attention. They are engaged in a relentless 247 algorithmic war to earn your tap.
Which raises an important question when you analyze the trajectory of these specific technologies.
Yeah, I'm looking at where this data is pointing, and the logical conclusion is slightly terrifying.
Consider the mechanisms we verified today. If Apple has already built the infrastructure to quietly deploy optical character recognition to extract meaning from flat image files, and Google is already deploying advanced natural language processing to extract deep contextual semantics from thousands of characters of unstructured text.
The algorithms are getting exponentially better at understanding the product without needing the developer to explain it to them.
Exactly. So how long until the operating system stop relying on the metadata entirely?
Wow.
How long until the search indexer completely bypasses the artificial storefront window and begins algorithmically crawling the actual compiled code of the in-app experience itself to determine who truly deserves to rank number one?
The silent salesperson bypassing the marketing department entirely and auditing the actual product. The invisible game is only getting more complex. Until next time, keep an eye on those storefronts.